toward the end of the book of Hebrews, the writer talks about what happened at Sinai. That mountain was on fire and shook, and there's darkness and tempest. The sight was so frightening that even Moses was in fear and trembling. But he told those in the book of Hebrews that he's writing to, probably in the city of Jerusalem right before the coming war. He says, "You have come to Mount Zion, this heavenly Jerusalem, the myriad of angels, the souls of righteous men made perfect, the Old Testament faithful," he had just described in chapter 11 of Hebrews. Mount Zion in the Old Testament was a fortress, the city of David. It became to be the spiritual city, the fortress of God that protects the remnant, the daughters of Zion, of the prophets. Mount Zion is where we come to when we enter Christ, where we have nothing to fear, neither life nor death nor persecution, any powers of this world. They cannot take us away from the love of God. No persecutor, no disease, death itself cannot remove us from His love. We stand on Mount Zion at this very moment. Our mountain is not on a map everywhere we go in this world. We don't have a place, Jesus said to the woman well at Samaria, where we go and worship God, or a temple we visit. We are the temple of God. We can sit down or bow down in any place in this world and worship God. And people all over this world this day, on the first day of the week, they bow down and worship Him. You know, in the Bible, when Moses was called to be a prophet, he was 80 years old. Most of us think our life is over when we're getting to be 60. Not so. His life of service was really just beginning. Moses said, "I'm too old, I can't talk very well." Jeremiah was called to be a prophet, and he said to God, "I'm too young." And God says, "Listen, Jeremiah, understand that when you speak about a nation, and you speak about its beginning and its strongness, it will rise up. And if you speak about a nation that's going to be destroyed, it will happen. Your tongue will do it because you're speaking for me." There is power in speaking the truth. We need to learn a lesson that God uses the weak. We have a great God who uses little bitty people, weak people, to do great things. Until we learn that, we're not going to be the type of people we need to be. Gideon was called. He made the excuse, "Who, me? I'm not a warrior, I'm a farmer. I'm the smallest tribe of Israel, the smallest family." You got the wrong guy. God said, "Blow your trumpet," after he saw a sign. He blew his trumpet. 32,000 people showed up to join him to fight against the Midianites. And God said, "You got too many. Because you'll say and you'll boast about it. I'm going to make you weak." He narrowed it down to 300 people to go out and face 135,000. On top of it, he says, "Don't take any weapons." God can use the weakness and make it strong. Incredible things when God is working in you and in me. I've been given a report about China, and it will remind you of the honor roll of chapter 11 in Hebrews. But you know, if I got to know you, a little better. And sat down with you and talked about your life, I could find some stories to tell about people right here in this room that changed their world, changed their family, changed their life, changed neighbors, built churches, stood the test of disease and cancer and fought it and was an example. I think of my dad upon his deathbed and the suffering he was going through, and people would go see him and they would come back encouraged and lifted up, not just him. I've known the people all of my life that I worship with every Sunday, that if Hebrews was written today, they'd be in it. This lesson today is about China and about the work there and about the work you're going to be helping with in the future, about allowing me to go and to work. But I would not be a good steward of God if I did not point this lesson right at your heart, to make you examine who you are, take all the excuses you make and all the things you claim that hinder you from doing what you ought to be doing, and missing all the opportunities that stare you in the face every single day, to make you think about it. I'll tell you one little secret that will change your life. Before your feet hit the floor every single day, before you lay your feet on the ground to take your first step while you're in your bed, you say a short prayer to God and you pray it sincerely, in faith. And you ask God to present to you opportunities to be a servant. If it's nothing else than giving a cup of cold water to someone who's thirsty, or someone in the store that's having a bad day and has a frown upon their face and you commend them for their work, say something cheerful to them to make them smile and look in your eyes, you'll be shocked sometimes how it can change that whole day and maybe the life of that person, to know that someone recognizes who they are. I visit a nation has 1.4 billion people, four times the population of the United States in the same land area. There is people all around, but there is loneliness and there is emptiness beyond compare, just like there is in this nation. And when we give our hearts to serve, we will change the world around us. And the truth is that God has an ability that when we do a kind act, even though we don't see immediate results today, I guarantee you, if you live long enough, you'll even find out 20 years later, 30 years later, 40 years later, things you did back then when you were young made an impression upon someone. You'll run into them again and they will commend you for that kind act. You'll find that your acts do mount up over time and change the lives of other people. Same land area as the U.S. Here's a map of the eastern coast of China along the Pacific Ocean. These are just the dates of congregations I've helped to start in the last 25 years. I get to thinking about the time that I've been going to China, is 25 years, and I think about Christ dying on the cross in about 30 A.D., best I can tell. The book of Acts ends in 62 A.D. with Paul in prison. His missionary journeys are through in 58. So in 28 years, Paul wrote the Colossians when he was in prison in Rome. He says, the gospel had been preached to every creature. He wasn't talking about planet Earth. He was talking about the entire Roman Empire, or the entire area of all five of those empires that crushed Israel for 600 or 700 years, Assyria, Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. And how God scattered the Jews by punishing them in all those land areas. And when Paul came along, there was only 80,000 Jews in Jerusalem at the time of Jesus. But there were 6 million Jews scattered throughout the Roman Empire that had been there for years. They had synagogues. There were Gentiles sitting in the back, God-fearers. When that rabbi came to their synagogue and was asked to speak, what we call Paul today, he stood up and he spoke from the scriptures about Jesus being the Christ, and he interpreted the Old Testament scripture saying, I had a revelation from God, and I opened up to them the mystery that was hidden in ages past, that the Gentile would be equal and co-heirs and fellow servants with the Jew. The ones in the front got jealous when all the Gentiles were jumping up and down that they didn't have to keep the law of Moses. And the entire Roman Empire heard the gospel. And thousands came to Jesus Christ in one generation. I spoke a little bit at the beginning of the Bible class hour about China and the struggle they went through in for hundreds of years, but especially in 1949 till 1980. And continued even after that. And they still struggle with many things like we do. But it had been a land that was shut off from the world. They were told by their chairman Mao that they were making more steel than England. In fact, England was going hungry, when in fact it was China that was starving. They were lied to. They were beaten. They were imprisoned. They were murdered simply for being a Christian. Even Buddhism and Islam were punished. There was an awakening when I first went to China. Young people that I met, and I don't speak Chinese to this day, very ashamed of that. I'm a mathematician and a chemist, okay? Not a language person. When I faced those young people in English Corner the first time, and they came to my room, and maybe we did the Chinese character lesson, and they got interested, and give them a Bible, at least share a Bible with them for a while. We couldn't, it was illegal to take them in. They said they had been in 88, and they took some Bibles in, but if you could get arrested when you got to the airport, they found them. In fact, the first airport I landed in China, tarmac, no big building, like a Greyhound bus station in Texas, okay, years ago, international airport. Walked off the tarmac in this little building about the size of this room. There to check your bags with their hands, not with x-rays. But there was a sign. No pornography. No Bibles on the same sign. I had 20 New Testaments and 2 entire Bibles. There were none printed. It was against the law to have them. People lost their life for having copies of the Bible under Chairman Mao. One of the most difficult things of my first 7 years in China was only being able to carry that many. I was blessed. I did not get caught. I did not get in trouble. They stopped digging into your bags about 1993, so I only had to do that twice. Go through it. But in 1997, they began to publish Bibles in China. I had a man that came to my hotel room, found out I was, one of my people I knew him. He was my age, maybe a little bit older at that time, probably, I guess, 15 years older. This man was hired by the government to distribute the Bibles among the state churches, the ones that they allowed to build, have meeting places. He had been a prisoner for 18 years, from 1962 to 1980, because he preached Christ. And now he was delivering Bibles, and the government was paying him. The factory where those Bibles were printed. Let me ask you a question. What is the most published book, bestseller every year since the printing press? What is it? It's the Bible. What's the second one? What's the second most printed book in the world in the last 500 years? It's Chairman Mao's Little Red Book. He had 1 billion people, and he published 1 billion books, and you had to have one on you everywhere you went. They were about this big, and you had to go to propaganda classes every night during the Cultural Revolution and study that book and memorize his sayings and be able to quote them back if you were asked. The factory where those 1 billion books were printed is the exact same building that they print Bibles now. Hallelujah. Talk about jumping up and down. I couldn't sit still the rest of that day. Bring me a box of Bibles. I didn't have to bring them in anymore, and I could give everyone a Bible. One of the saddest things in my first few trips is you had to ration your Bibles. You couldn't give it to everyone. You had to last 35 days over there, and you got people coming all day long, your room full of 25 people, every city you went to. And you had to decide who got a Bible and who didn't. These cities in red are simply, I did not start churches there. I've worked there. Other people that I've known and people I've taken with me started some churches there, including my son. My daughter's been to China, my wife. Several other preachers. We've had 15 co-workers of mine that I took in arrested and cannot go back in the last 25 years. About 1998, I went down to the southern China Moor and wound up going into the Guangxi province right on the border. Even went out further off that map to the west, next to Kyrgyzstan, Muslim territory, and preached the gospel there. Met a lady who some foreigner had given a Bible to, maybe as a tourist when they went in. She got a Bible. She was a Muslim. She was a professor at a university. The minority group there is Muslim. It's a very troubled hot spot today with terrorism against the Chinese government, but controlled by them, by China. Their ancestors came from Persia or Iran. Their language is spoken by 6 million people, but there's no complete Bible in their language. I met a lady on a train way back on the west side in Hangzhou, on the east side in Hangzhou, China. I was with another Christian from Hangzhou on a train going to Shanghai. A lady sat down next to us. We'd already, and this would have been in the 2000s, just a few years ago, where I don't fear anymore. I do get a Bible out on the buses and public transportation. Used to and never think of doing that. But this lady, after she'd been there a little while, she looks over and she reaches in her purse and she pulls out a Bible. She's a believer. And she's from the far western province. She said, "Oh, we need your help. Please come." Didn't speak English, but I had a translator with me. She only had one stop to go on that train. And she made me promise I would come and see her. At the time, I didn't even know where it was. But I went out there, and I met a lady who was a professor that got that Bible. She read it herself without any help. Became a believer in Jesus Christ, renounced Islam, but lost. Not only was she persecuted by the government for being a Christian, but she was persecuted by her family for being a Christian. Down south, several churches in the southern part next to Vietnam. Chinese there, they began to promote the gospel in Vietnam, doing business there from China. One of the beautiful things that's happened is that Chinese people are missionaries in other countries. One young lady that's my translator sometimes, she now crosses over into Burma, or called Myanmar now, is Burma when I was in school. But they've gone in there, crossed the border illegally. It's a drug border. A lot of drugs coming into China from Burma and Thailand. Heavily watched. They didn't have visas. They went in there, served the villages. There's another problem going on. The Chinese people go over there and kill, take the organs, bring them back into China, and sell the organs for transplant. The children, they started a school there. Chinese people started school. They raised funds to go in there. The kids don't have any school to go to, the poor children. They go in there and they meet the parents, trying to spread the gospel that way. The children one day on the way to school passed 9 bodies on the side of the road. There's battles between rebels against the government, Muslim problems there. When I went to a mountain area next to Burma on another trip, top of a mountain, some people that actually are inside of China, but they're related to the Burmese DNA type of thing. 500 years they've lived there, but they look more like them than they're not Chinese or Han Chinese. So I used to carry those Bibles, only carry what I could carry on the plane. Students were only loaned Bibles till they proved their interest. Then I ran out many times. I taught Bible for a week and a half. Had students all day long, had one Bible, the one I had to keep myself to be able to teach. Now, everyone gets a Bible. Persecution. In China, the persecution of house churches, that is those underground churches, they are open buildings you can go to and worship since 1980. Okay, Mao wouldn't let it happen at all. But when those buildings open up, most of the people would not go. Okay, they were, even those who would believe, they were afraid. Now, it's estimated that in 1990, there were about 2 million believers of all varieties in China. Even the Roman Catholics, you could not practice your religion. Even in the state church. You'd have a Catholic church, but you couldn't have any ties with the West. Well, the Pope's in the West. So you were Catholic, but you were Popeless, okay, in China when it began. So most of the Roman Catholics, they went underground because they still wanted to follow the Pope. So they were hidden. So still today, probably 70 to 80% of those who believe or in house churches. There's varying degrees of freedom compared to years ago. We find that there was, I talked about Peter earlier. He had a house church in his home, about 20 people meeting in the wintertime. They met outside in the warmer weather there in Manchuria. But he got arrested simply by having some Christians pray and sing together. There weren't any threat to the government. Bob Small, when we tried to send money to Peter after he got arrested, lost his job, lost his apartment. They were living with the parents. He had a baby and a wife. Bob Small went in 94. We collected some money here in the States to give to him and his family. And he was arrested when he got there. They were waiting. 2000 in Zhuhai, and I have two guests I mentioned earlier. Judy and Lily, and Judy's husband Mark today, they were there in Zhuhai and would remember some of the events there two or three times. They had some trouble in Zhuhai. There were, my son was actually teaching Bible. I was had just left and gone to another city, Shenzhen, right across the bay. And he had 14 Chinese with him, and 8 police came in the room and stopped them. Luckily for my son, he was 22, but he looked 18, and they just told him to stop. They were really looking for me. And he called me, and we got out of there the next day or so. But lucky for him, later his job he got as an engineer required him to go to China. So if he had been arrested and lost his visa privileges, that would have been a real problem for him. In Dalian, 2000, Christians were interrogated. One lost his job because he was housing the church. 2001, 5 Americans in Tianjin. They started a church from a lady I baptized in Shanghai. She went back home and helped start the church, and 5 Americans were arrested there in 2001. The church was scattered. Even in Shenyang, back in 1993, the people that fled from there, just like in the New Testament, when the people left Jerusalem and they fled, they spread the gospel everywhere they went. Well, we see some of those cities that just keep sort of going south. Well, when people fled, I followed them up and we started churches in other cities from that. Some of them were started that way. I was warned of police surveillance in 2001 and ran to Judy's house. I was leaving the hotel. The manager there was a believer that I'd baptized her husband and her mother, and she warned us that they were acting as gardeners in the hotel complex and watching everything we did and taking pictures of guests who came and that type of thing. So I had a tip to get out. And I was leaving. I didn't want to get Judy in trouble, but she, her little daughter, Kai Kai at that time, call her Kai now, but she was about three, I think, or four, something like that. And I was like her granddad, but she said, "You got to come to my apartment before you go and say goodbye to Kai." And so I did, and I brought one of my, you know, preacher friends with me. And so she wouldn't let us out of the house after that. She imprisoned me for a week or 10 days. I don't know exactly how long it was. And so she invited the other Christians we had been teaching, and everybody just poured. In fact, when I got there, it was already like five or six people, I think, fixing lunch for me. So we stayed in her home for that time. And so the Juhai group were questioned. Police got rooms on each side of us. I remember we went to lunch right after that. We were out in the park. They even followed us out there. And, you know, you sit there and have lunch together. We used the room there, the private room, to study our Bibles. And you're sitting there realizing you're being watched, sort of followed, whatever. Just admire the courage and faith that they have. Here's Rebecca from Suzhou. Rebecca had a dad who was a high government official, communist. And her dad not only threatened her and told her never to go near Christians again, but he also actually, you might say, imprisoned her for quite a long time to keep her from going out at all. She eventually got out, and she lost a lot of weight. She was really burdened for a long time, but she stayed with it. She kept her faith, and she's been a great blessing for the Lord's work in that area. Here's Mary. Met her in Hangzhou. This is after the Bibles were being published, and you could buy them at the state church. You could visit there. Originally, when they did it, I thought it might happen, and they did for about a year after they began to sell the Bibles at the state church. You had to go to their meeting on Sunday at the state church, and then afterwards they'd open the bookstore and you could go buy the books, and they took your ID, the Chinese ID. Then they'd follow you home and see where your house church was. But they stopped doing that about a year after 97. So it was pretty easy. I could even go in and buy them there myself, but usually the brethren would take care of it after that and have plenty for me to take out other places and also to use locally. Mary was met by one of the members of the church that I started in Hangzhou. She's one that went all the way through the Cultural Revolution as a Christian. Mary, by the way, I'm on my knees in that picture. All right. And Mary was 94 years old in that picture. She had scalding hot water. She served 7 years in prison. She had scalding hot water poured down her throat to get her to renounce Jesus. She is responsible for the conversion of thousands. She was there at the state church. She was buying big grocery shopping bags of books. That little lady carrying them, you know, having to ride a bus out back out in the countryside. I met her in my hotel room because one of the Christians brought her there from the bookstore. And then she would go out in the country. She'd come back every day to study. And she brought another lady with her one day, and we studied about baptism. And it changed her whole approach to the gospel. She tried to pull me to go with her to the countryside, but I had so much going there, I didn't go. But this is one of the people you just really one of the things I remember, most of the converts that I had made at that time were very young, college students. And I was amazed at how they latched on to her also, heard her stories and saw her faith and her commitment to stick with it. It was a great encouragement to them. 2009, my last real big test. I had plainclothes policemen I noticed in the hotel lobby one of the cities down south, Guilin. And so I left in the middle of the night to avoid. I had to immediately call one girl that arranged, got everybody together, and I called her, made one of those, fast phone calls so they couldn't trace my phone type of thing. You know, you watch TV programs. And so I quickly said to her, "Wendy," said, "canceled everything. We're in trouble. Just tell them to not come tonight at all to the hotel. And there had been about 40 people there in 2 hours if I hadn't made that call. And there was four policemen in the room next to us. I saw them. In fact, I told the people going up the stairs. I saw the guy downstairs and said, there's guys in their jackets and, you know, FBI-type clothes. If they're there on the room next to us, they had the door open, sitting there smoking in the middle of the day. And so I got out and left there. I thought my work in China was over. I got on a bus at 5 o'clock in the morning, left, and riding on a bus 14 hours back to where I came from on a plane. But I went on a bus. The plane, you had to show your ID. So about 2 hours in the ride, tears coming down. I finally called Linda. I didn't call her when it happened. I called her the next morning on the bus, my wife. But something hit me as I was sitting there fretting and concerned about it. I said, Daryl, it doesn't depend on you. You've been in China now for, 18 years at that time. If you haven't built something, if you haven't got something with the Chinese, they can maintain their faith and keep it going, then you haven't done your work. God can use anybody. He'll get it done. Doesn't depend on me. This is burden just lifted off of me. And actually, that was the beginning of my trip, so I spent 1 week already, but I went through my rest of my schedule after I wasn't going. I'd just been to Guangzhou. I went back there and had a great time teaching people. And I continued, for 3 more weeks and have not had any more trouble out of it. I stayed away from Guilin for a while. And I could think of two or three things that they might have got me, they were looking for me. I won't go into all of that, but it's interesting that I go into a city and I learn so many people. I've been in Guilin, that province, for about 4 or 5 years by that time. And I don't know how many people I knew, but several hundred. And I actually had people that knew people inside the police station. I had women that were Christians that were married to policemen. And so we had ways of finding out what they were thinking, what they were doing. It's kind of an interesting cat and mouse game. But English Corner, how do we start? How do you go into a place you don't know the language, you don't know anybody, go into a city of several million people? When Chairman Mao died, they were tied to Russia, and Russian was the main second language, but in 1980 they began to push English as the second language. They were making a new economy, trying to use more of a capitalistic approach instead of the communist approach. Still, one-party rule, okay, and dictatorship. But they made sure that they were going to try. They were bankrupt, and everybody was so poor. So they were learning English, and the ones that were learning English, they had not just to take a language. English was their lifeline out of the country. They could come and study in America or England or Australia or New Zealand. And also, the new economy, there were foreign companies beginning to invest in China by 1990. There were very few foreigners, but it was starting, okay? And so they hoped to get a job, maybe with a good job, by speaking English, being able to translate to the factories and things of that nature with Americans and foreigners. So English Corner on Sunday, people would gather in a city like Shanghai. At that time, Shanghai was 15 million. It's 27 million now. All right, but they would go to the Central Park there in the city, and they would gather around and practice oral English with each other. And when a foreigner would show up, it's like you were a movie star. I'd have the number of people in this room, they would just gather around me just to hear me talk. Now, it's very interesting. You probably know that even though I'm from Colorado, I was born in the South, spent the first 32 years in Mississippi and Alabama. So most of the Christians in the church that speak English speak Southern. So... and So they came there to learn English, and I can't preach there. There's always a government agent at every assembly, okay? That's why they don't like the house church set up. They want to hear everything that's being said. And the preachers at the state church have to do the propaganda stuff in their sermons and all of that is why many don't go there. But when you when you go there, you talk about marriage. What can make you happy? What really is life about? Why are you here? You talk about things like that, and you put it on a spiritual plane. They're going to ask you about, you know, politics and China-U.S. relationships. And at that time, when I first went, it was, you know, Clinton was in office. And later you get Monica Lewinsky and all that stuff. And does morality matter? You know, I said, yeah. It was always, it was like Mars Hill in Athens, where they wouldn't learn anything new, you know, because you think of North Korea right now. They've been blocked out. Those people don't know anything about the world because only what their government tells them. All right, so I would make friends, and I'd give out my hotel. I'd every once in a while, I had a bunch of little pieces of paper I'd written out, you know, my hotel name, phone number, and room number. And so every 20 minutes, you know, they'd come and go as you were there. And I'd give an advertisement. Anybody want to come and see me? You'd take one of these. Everybody would put their hand out. And so you would say, you know, come, we'll practice some English. If you want to take me and show me something in your city, I'll go with you. That type of thing. And they'd all, a lot of times, do that on their own, volunteer to do that, just to be with you. So making friends was easy at English Corner. And that's where a person like myself that can't speak the language made friends very quickly. Just to tell you, and we'll look at some pictures here in just a moment, we walk through the streets and somebody speak to us, we'll talk to them. Hotel staff, depend on referral, of course, from friends. People in English Corner, next time they come, they'll bring a friend with them when they come. You didn't meet the day before, but they'll bring that person with another person with them. And Christians move from place to place and help us start new churches. I later, 1997-98, the internet came into China and the world. I took a computer probably the first time around 97-98. Began teaching by email, using that to teach Bible lessons. Today, one of the things I do is get up at 6 in the morning. I teach a class in China at 9 o'clock at night over there. And so on Skype, you have about 10 to 15 students and do that several days a week. Chinese teachers, university classrooms. I would, at English Corner, somebody might be an English teacher. They would ask me to come to their classroom at the university to talk to their class. And I would even teach some of the characters there in the classroom when I went. The teachers were usually very good. They weren't policemen. And a lot of times even the teacher, to get a little time off, they would leave the room. I just had the kids there to talk to. And so a lot of contacts were made that way in the 90s, and I could still do that as well. There's a lot more foreigners. There's a lot of foreign people teaching at the university year-round, so I'm not as unusual as I used to be. I don't have the biggest nose in China like they thought in 91. Some of the marriage seminars, the subject of marriage, they never hear it from their parents. They don't have courses about it. They don't get it in the universities. There's not that many books written on it, at least in the 90s. So this is a topic when we started churches and we'd go to the hotel and people would come to the hotel when I was there. We would announce a lesson on marriage and we'd have more friends come that night. And they would come, hear the singing, see the fellowship and the family relationships we had. They would hear a topic on marriage that was very practical to them. And it was a great drawing power to get them back. They would come back the next time and we could teach them what they needed to be saved. I'll tell you a little bit later if I get that far. What's the time? Ooh, it's already time. Okay, I'm going to have to. I didn't even get into my pictures. Give another 10 minutes or so. We'll try to get into that. We'll come up on that. I'll just continue. There's the English Corner in Hangzhou. So I usually will try to get a picture of the crowd every once in a while, and I have later, and then you look back and you see who became Christians. There's three people in that picture that were baptized as a result of meeting me at English Corner. Much younger then, right? Yeah. Here's five girls, seven. There's seven girls in the circle. They're all roommates in the same room, in a regular college dorm room like you have here. There's sometimes nine in one room. But the seven girls in that picture, six out of the seven became Christians. One little girl, you know, really got interested, and she kept bringing her roommates, and one by one they were baptized into Christ. Little Annie, she's not in that picture. That's four of them right there studying. I've got a computer there she's pressing, the self-taught lesson type of thing. Here's an English corner in Suzhou. We're starting a church. This would be in the 2000s. Cynthia was converted. I went to there was actually a Christian that went over there and taught English, paid by the Chinese government to teach English at Chinese University. And so that's another way that we make contacts. Is they can't really teach it in the classroom. They get in trouble and kicked out if anybody reported them about saying something about God. But when I go and stay for a couple of days, and I teach his classes, and that's okay. And he leaves the room, the teacher does. That way, if I say something that is not good, you know, as far as the government, then he doesn't get in trouble. He said, well, I didn't know what he was going to say. I didn't know what he said. So I go in there and make friends. Well, this one girl, Cynthia, and I'll show a close-up of her right there. Cynthia was in the class one day, and I taught. It was one of the worst classes. I've done this probably 50 times over the years, go into a classroom like that and talk for a couple hours and make friends. And that day, they just weren't listening. They weren't paying attention. They were almost rude. This was very unusual for a Chinese classroom. They respect teachers very highly. But anyway, this lunchtime, and it was over, and everybody was walking out. Usually, I'd have like 10 people at least come up and want to talk more and stay, and, you know, I could go to lunch with them or something. But anyway, only one girl, and it was Cynthia. I never even noticed her while I was teaching. And she was in the very back, I guess. But all I see is she's walking up this. Just like very bold, I mean, just strutting almost up to me. And I had spoken about maybe a couple of the Chinese characters. And I talk about creation, Adam and Eve. And she says, she comes up to the desk up there and she says, well, I came from a monkey. I mean, I wanted to say to her, well, you look like a monkey. And which was not true. She's a beautiful little girl. But I said, well, that's interesting. And I said, would you like, you got some time? Would you be able to sit down with me and talk some about that? And she said, I don't have a class until 3, okay? So I went back in the teacher's office. We went back there, and he got somebody to send some noodles to us in the room. So we had lunch sitting down, and I got a Bible out and began to study with her. Now, she had the best English I've ever seen. And I could talk to her just like I talk to you. Usually you have to teach. You have to talk in special English, okay? Like, ever heard Voice of America, the way they broadcast in a foreign country? Today, President Trump or President Bush, you know, he said, you know, really slow and distinct, you know, take all the adjectives out, you know, that type of thing. So that's how I usually taught when I spoke. But I could talk to her just like I'm talking to you. She was really, really good. In 3 hours, that little girl's life was turned upside down. Right? She was baptized 2 weeks later. Okay. Now, she became a very good worker there in the church in Shanghai. And I was bringing two other preachers in, or actually a businessman and a preacher. And the businessman, I got him to do. He's got a little book he's writing on leadership as a servant like Jesus, and using that approach to lead your company. So he was going to teach that to anybody, to bring your friend. You know, here's a guy that's a Christian that done well in business, and he does it from a Christian viewpoint. And then the other guy I got, the preacher, said, you take anybody that doesn't want to do the business thing, and I was going to teach the book of Revelation. First time for these Christians there, and told them to invite their friends, but you had to take the Revelation course. You know, you got to read the book of Revelation. You got to have been a Christian for a certain amount of time. You've got to read all the New Testament, at least, and some of the Old, that type of thing. And so anyway, I asked her if she would do it for me. And she spent time, you know, I sent her my PowerPoint. She translated everything. And She was so good when I would up teaching. If I used a gesture, she'd use a gesture when she translated. I mean, she would, if I had a face on me, she'd have a face on her exactly like mine. Okay, she was really, really good. Now, later on, she went, actually, the teacher there that, you know, was in his classroom, he baptized her and then, you know, followed up after I left. But I went to Beijing where he was working then, and I asked her if she'd want to go and see him again, and, you know, she could help me translate the book of Hebrews. I was going to teach Hebrews in the Beijing church. And so she went up there. During the time we were there, we did some marriage counseling with a couple. They were, they married. All they had in common, both of them were out in the countryside teaching the gospel. He was 50, she was 20. And they traveled out in the countryside to preach and said, we need to get married, I guess. So they did. And they were having trouble. And so, you know, they would tell their side. They were in front of us, and she would translate. And when she'd listen to me and then wait till I was finished, and she would tell them in Chinese. But when they were talking, she would lean over and whisper in my ear. And as soon as they said it, she would tell me the English meaning. That's called whisper translation. If you've ever seen the UN, they have all the different delegates have their microphones. There's somebody up top taking that language they're hearing, and they put it into their language that's listening. And she realized at that moment she could do that. And now she's working over in Europe at the European Union, that type of thing. So she was pretty sharp. I about died when she left the country because she was so good to be able to translate. She did a lot of my PowerPoint lessons in Chinese. Anyway, I showed that picture here. She went with me to Suzhou. She's only been a Christian about a year. And I was starting a church there. There was already two sisters there. And so they were busy during the day. But one of the sisters that was in Suzhou, she had a little intern that summer, a student at the university. And she was in charge of establishing English Corner at her school. And so they made one especially for us while we were there. And she did a great job there just going out on the sidewalks. And it was not like one they normally would come to. It was like we were just between the dorms and the classrooms, and we stood and just sort of pulled people in and made contacts. And then the next day, you got people showing up to hear the gospel. So that's some of the methods we use to reach people. Teaching in the hotel. Just look at some of the traffic. That's for our hotel. Very busy places where we stay in the center of a huge city. There's the Buddhism being worshipped. Shenzhen, just the hotel room, just packed with people every night. The big cities. This is Judy that's here today from Zhuhai, but that's her college roommate. I don't think you've seen each other for years, right, when you talked to her. But Judy was going through a divorce, and so she was really sad. So they talked to Sandra from Shenzhen that I knew very well. They called on the phone almost every day, I guess, and she got interested in Jesus. So when I came to Shenzhen, I'd already been working in Zhuhai. I didn't know Judy. But she came over to be baptized in Shenzhen. And later on that trip is when I came over to Zhuhai also, and we got a church started. And Judy just demanded the church meets in my house, week-old Christian. She's opening up her house to have the church stay there. Here's in Hangzhou. You got myself teaching back there. Charles is already teaching. He's got the person that was studying with him took the picture. There's a lady. Oh, I'm pointing at my. That won't work. This lady right here is lives in Arkansas, I guess it was, I think. And she was over there teaching English at university. And so she was there in the room helping out there in Hangzhou. This has been about 7 or 8 years after it was started, the church was started. Charles is in Canada. One of the difficulties in our work in the 90s was the fact that they were trying to study English to study abroad. So you get a church started, you get maybe some leaders, some people that could lead the worship and teach, and then they go to U.S., leave China. And so that was a real hard burden trying to get, you know, the solid churches going because your leadership always left. There's in Zhuhai, some of the brethren. There's Lily that's here today and her baptism. She didn't know I had that picture. She sent me some of the day she was baptized, but she was all dressed up and nice. So we got her wet hair there. But Lily's a wonderful Christian, steadfast. She's been here in the States for a few years, married here, and worshiped down. Actually, went down to right across from where I grew up, Mobile, Alabama. It's in Judy's house. There's some of the Christian singing. They love to sing. The Chinese love to sing. That's in Hangzhou. It's also in Hangzhou. That's in Zhuhai. Guangzhou again. Just see some of the faces and worship. And all these people you're seeing at the time were probably less than 3 years old in their faith. A lot of them brand new that week, type of thing. Hangzhou. This particular situation, there's a lady named Lydia I met in Zhuhai. Lydia came to me. She was not a believer. She actually came at give a favor to a friend who was interested. So she came as a translator. And heard the lessons and translated the lessons. Not even a believer. A lot of times my translators, when I went, unbelievers were doing the translating. But it worked. Had the Bible out. A lot of times the translators were converted. So Lydia got interested. And then she was an English teacher at the time, had her own English school. And my wife was with me in the year 2000 and went to Zhuhai. And we had people there from 8 to 12, just packed. And so I hadn't moved. I was sitting on the bed, leaning against the wall. And my wife's sitting on a stool with a lampstand. And it was just wall-to-wall people. So Lydia calls at like 11, says, I'm going to bring 15 people. I said, okay. So you come after 12. So those people, I kicked them out, go eat, and then 15 more filled the room. And she later became a Christian. I knew Lydia a long time. Then she's the one that got me to come to Guangxi province down south by Vietnam. And, it's 11:25. I'm sorry. Okay, I'm going to have to quit. I'll pick up here tonight, okay, and tell you the story that's followed from this. Thanks so much for your good attention this morning. I really apologize. I thought like 10 after now. So thank you so much for your good time. We're going to have a song that's been selected. We'll stand up at this moment and sing that if you know.